An old farmer was working on the land with his horse. This horse was sick. The farmer felt compassion and decided to leave the horse loose so it could roam free in the mountains and go wherever it wanted to live out the remaining part of its life. A neighbor from the village nearby visited after hearing the story and said to the farmer, "Why did you do that? Now the only horse you have is gone. You're so unfortunate. How will you work the land now?" The farmer said, "We shall see." After 3 days, the farmer's horse came back to the farm with 10 new, healthy, and young horses that happened to follow the old, sick horse back to the farm. When the village heard of the old farmer's good fortune, people stopped by the farm to congratulate him. "What a great fortune," they exclaimed. "You must be very happy now." Again, the farmer said, "Who knows? We shall see." The farmer had a son. One day after the horses came to the farm, the son attempted to train the wild horses, but one of the horses threw the son off the horse and broke his son's leg. Then the villagers stopped by and told the farmer, "Such bad luck. Your son now cannot walk, and you alone have to handle all the farm's work. How will you manage? You must be really upset and sad." The farmer said, "We shall see." 1 month later, a war broke out. Soldiers arrived in the village demanding that men and all boys above a certain age come with them to be conscripted into the emperor's army. Because of the boy's broken leg, though, the old farmer's son was deemed unfit and was not chosen. "What a great fortune you have," said the villagers. "Our young sons are marching away, but yours is home with you. You must be really happy." One more time, the farmer replied, "Who knows? We shall see." And then he headed off to work the field. The farmer's son's leg eventually healed, but he was left with a small limp. Again, some villagers came and commented, "Bad luck, my friend. You still have no help on the farm, as your son's leg is still not healed properly." Again, the farmer replied, "We shall see. Who knows?" As it turned out, most men and boys of the village had died in the war, and the farmer and his son were the only able-bodied men capable of working the lands. The farmer's family became very wealthy. Some villagers said to him, "What a great fortune." And again, the farmer replied, "We shall see." Nothing is certain. The only thing certain is uncertainty. Even the secure methodology, these 7 steps, is uncertain because different people will have a different response to it. And paradoxical as it seems, uncertainty is really the only thing we can rely on. We've been conditioned or brainwashed to think we have certainty, though. Just the other day, I was speaking with somebody on my team. His 46-year-old uncle had just died. His uncle had a seizure, fell in the kitchen, and hit his head on the counter. As you can imagine, this came as a big shock to my team member and his family. Again, nothing is certain. It doesn't matter what we do today. Each and every one of us may not make it till tomorrow. I have healthy friends that have died from a sudden heart attack. If you're a vegan and you eat, you know, a pure plant-based diet, it doesn't guarantee you'll live longer than anyone else. Again, there's no certainty. Life simply isn't that certain. COVID-19 exposed this false sense of security that many of us have been feeling for decades. And a lot of us are freaking out because of it. We have to embrace uncertainty and discomfort. And we have to be okay with that. We need to be okay with the discomfort in order to grow and improve. And to achieve Kaizen, we have to be adaptable. Uncertainty along a journey is okay as long as we're learning and trying to make improvements. This is the nature of Kaizen. It's even okay to take detours sometimes. At least you know that you didn't take the right path, and that's not the direction to head. If you take Thomas Edison's advice, he failed at inventing the light bulb over 1,000 times, but he practiced Kaizen. He didn't give up. He just kept figuring out another way that did not work. When is the perfect time to start? Many people decide they'll start when things are right. These people will probably say the same thing about the secure methodology. They'll start when they have time, or when it feels right, or when it's the new year, and so on. Why not start now, though? If you keep telling yourself you'll start something later, when, you know, the planets are all aligned, the reality is you'll never do it. And this is where Kaizen can help. It's about just starting, having that courage to start, and know that we're probably not going to get it right. But if we practice the Kaizen, we'll make the improvements. Two types of people. There are generally two types of people, or two categories of people in the world. They're dabblers and masters. To achieve Kaizen, you need to be a master. Mastery is an endless pursuit. Dabblers are people that read something once, they think they understand it, and then they try something new, and if it doesn't work the way they thought it would, they give up. You might hear them say, "I tried that and it didn't work for me." That's what a dabbler will say. A master would never say something like that. Dabblers typically have a fixed mindset. Again, they think they're hardwired and can only do specific things that align with their brain's hardwiring. Doug, who I've talked about quite a bit, is a dabbler. Masters know that true proficiency takes time, and improvement is part of that process. And doing something new that you're trying to master means you're going to encounter uncertainty along the journey, and that's okay. Masters are flexible, adaptable, and open to change and trying new things. They embrace that growth mindset we talked about for the second step in the secure methodology. This graph is a good example of a master's journey. The journey to mastery is going to be filled with valleys periodically, and often, in order to master a new skill, or to get better at a skill you already know, you have to unlearn something. So you might actually get worse at it first. So you're going to have some valleys periodically. And then what happens is right after the valley, where your skill goes down for a little bit, you go up quite a bit. And then you may hit another peak, and then another valley, and then up. But overall, your skill is continuously going up. You just have a few dips here and there. And with mastery, you persist through those valleys. Often with a dabbler, what they do is the first valley they hit, they give up. And what they fail to realize is on the other side of that valley is the next level. So mastery is a journey, and it takes a lot of persistence. Because it is a process of never-ending improvement, achieving Kaizen demands flexibility, reflection, root cause analysis, and adaptability. These qualities are a requirement. Even Tiger Woods, one of the greatest golfers of all time, practices Kaizen, and he works constantly and consistently and persistently to improve his golf swing. Here's a quote from Tiger Woods. "Because my chipping motion is tied to my full swing, it has changed as I've worked with different instructors over the years. At one point, I held the shaft more vertical and used a weaker grip. Then I switched up and my hands were lower at address than they are now. For me, getting comfortable with the new chipping motion has always been of the hardest parts of a new swing, but it's vital." Key takeaways. The only thing certain is uncertainty. We have to be okay with that discomfort in order to grow and improve. If you keep telling yourself you'll start something later, when the planets are all aligned, or when everything lines up perfectly, the reality is you'll never do it. There are two types of people, masters and dabblers. To achieve and practice Kaizen, you need to be a master. Masters are flexible, adaptable, and open to trying new things. They embrace the growth mindset. What's next? In the next lesson, we'll talk about Kaizen and how to adopt it into your organization. I will also dive deeper into root cause analysis, and we'll talk about one of the more interesting root cause analysis stories, the Washington Monument, and what was causing it to deteriorate. Let's move on to lesson 3.